Greetings to each one this morning. It has been good. It's interesting to be here and see how God directs the service. And as we start out, God's guidance and then the faithfulness. And now this morning, I want to talk, or I believe we'll talk about the compassion of God. And I don't know, did Cameron, you can go ahead and put it up, Cameron, if you can get it up, and hopefully you'll be able to see it. I put an outline there. So this morning we're going to go to Jonah, and we'll be talking about Jonah this morning. Before I get started, for those of you that were in Miro, if you're interested, I got a notice from Bryce, and he sent a thing, and there's an update on like what they've been doing and stuff there. Also, if there's a couple people that are familiar and comfortable with framing, they could use a couple people. Of course, it ends up being right in February, so the date, they have a couple people that would go, and they could use a couple more, and he said somewhere from February 7 to February 28, somewhere in there. So anyhow, so I told him that I have a son getting married, so I won't be able to come, but anyhow. But if you would like the update from Miro, I can forward it to you so you can see what's happening there. This morning, as we looked at, in our Sunday school, we look at John and his faithfulness to the end. And then this morning, we think of Jonah, and we all know the story of Jonah and how he ran from God. I thought about starting out asking if Jonah was, if he was a good prophet or if he was a bad prophet, just to kind of trigger your minds a little bit. Now, I'm not going to ask, I mean, that can direct your mind a little bit, but as I thought of Jonah, we have maybe about a month and a half of his entire life in one book. And I started thinking, if somebody looked at a month and a half of my life, you could probably consider me either good or bad, because I've been both, I think. You know, we have our times that we, like Jonah, possibly have not been faithful. I don't know how many of you read anything about the people that suffer in other countries, the Christians that suffer. As I was studying, I came across, this is from Nigeria. There was a pastor there. Nigeria is in the top six, I believe, in 2024 of the suffering on the World Watch list for violence. And there was a staggering 4,118 Christians that were killed for their faith in Nigeria in 2024. And there was a pastor, Pastor Zachariah. He said, when I saw her, my wife, I remembered the life that I lived with her. We went out preaching together in the Northeast region. We opened churches together. We did everything together. We walked hand in hand with each other. We did not have any problems. Honestly, when this attack took place, I felt as if God had forsaken me, because I said, if God is in control, why would he allow his people to cause this kind of attack on us? Where is he that he will not take charge of the situation? He has the power to kill them, but decides not to. Then a little bit later, he says, for those who have found themselves in similar situations with that which we have experienced, my prayer is that we should rely on God, because he is everything that we live for. I read that because as we look into the life of Jonah, we can look at him and say, well, my goodness, he ran when God called him to do something. If we look at the time that he lived in and what he could possibly be facing by going to this group, it would have caused a lot of fear, I believe, in each one of us. He was called to go to Nineveh to preach to the Ninevites there. And if you were to go back and look at the Assyrians and how they treated other countries, other people, they were Sorry, my notes shut off here. They were very brutal, barbaric. They were not kind at all. And I'm not going to go into the details of how they treated their people that they took prisoners. But I believe any one of us that would look at us would have had probably some fear just as well as Jonah did. It's interesting in Sunday school, the verse in Psalms was brought up, "The fear of man bringeth a snare." I thought that was interesting as we look at what Jonah was facing and what would be easy to follow fear. This morning I want to turn with me to Jonah, and I'm going to go ahead. I want to read, I'm going to read all four chapters in Jonah this morning, and then we're going to come back and so the outline, Jonah was called twice, and kind of Jonah's, the whole process of his life, and then come together at the bottom to learn of the compassion that Jonah missed and the compassion of our God. Jonah 1, it says, "The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, to go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness had come up before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid and cried out to their own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below the deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, 'How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us so we do not perish.' When the sailors said to each other, 'Come, let us cast,' sorry, then the sailors said to each other, 'Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity.' They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, 'Tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble to us? What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you?' He answered, 'I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land.' This terrified them, and they asked, 'What have you done?' They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, 'What shall we do to make the sea calm down for us?' 'Pick me up and throw me into the sea,' he said. He replied, 'and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you.' Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried out to the Lord, 'Please, Lord, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, Lord, have done as you pleased.' Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord. They offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. Now the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, 'In my distress I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been vanished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me, the deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head, to the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever, but you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord.' And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time. 'Go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message I give you.' Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord and went to Nineveh. Now Nineveh was a very large city. It took 3 days to go through it. Jonah began to Jonah began by going a day's journey into the city, proclaiming, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. The Ninevites believed God. A fast was proclaimed, and all of them, from the greatest to the least, put on sackcloth. When Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, he rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. This is the proclamation he issued in Nineveh. By the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flocks, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink, but let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and with compassion turn from his fierce anger so that we will not perish. When God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, he relented and did not bring on them the destruction he had threatened. But to Jonah, this seemed very wrong, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord, "Isn't this what I said, Lord, when I was still at home? That is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, Lord, take away my life, for it is better for me to die than to live." But the Lord replied, "Is it right for you to be angry?" Jonah had gone out and sat down at a place on the east of the city. There he made himself a shelter, sat in its shade, and waited to see what would happen to the city. Then the Lord provided a leafy plant and made it grow up over Jonah to give shade for his head to ease his discomfort. Jonah was very happy about the plant. But at dawn the next day, God provided a worm which chewed the plant so that it withered. When the sun rose, God provided a scorching east wind, and the sun blazed on Jonah's head so that he grew faint. He wanted to die and said, "It would be better for me to die than to live." But God said to Jonah, "Is it right for you to be angry about the plant?" "It is," he said, "and I'm so angry I wish I were dead." But the Lord said, "You have been concerned about this plant, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. And should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and also many animals?" God had a task for Jonah, and he ran from it. In Psalm 137, 8 and 9, it says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wing of the dawn, I settle on the far side of the sea. Even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely darkness will hide me, the light become night around me. Even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for the darkness is as light to you." Jonah knew this God. He knew he couldn't run, or he knew he couldn't hide. Sometimes fear, sometimes hatred, will make us do some crazy things. Things that aren't reasonable. It doesn't say it in the first chapter of Jonah, as we're looking through it here, but it says in chapter 4, verse 2, Jonah knew the compassion of God. There was something in Jonah, whether it was anger at the Ninevites, they were back and forth, there could have been things there that he was angry, or was it fear? But there was something that Jonah didn't want to see them forgiven. Jonah had a choice to make. Tristan and I were sitting there this morning, and he made a comment that he was going to talk, or that he said something about Corrie ten Boom. I said, "Now wait a minute," and he said, "Now you're not sharing the same one I am, are you?" But my mind goes back to Corrie ten Boom when she was in prison, and her sister, they were brutally treated in prison, and she saw her sister die, and then later she met the person that brought so much pain and suffering in prison, and was confronted to forgive that person. She also had a choice. Would she forgive them, or would she not? She chose to forgive them in the power of forgiveness. Sometimes we're not so much different. We find ourselves in a similar situation. What will we do? We look at Jonah, we say, well, he ran from God. What about when God's Spirit speaks to you and I? Will we listen? Or we just ignore it? Kind of go on because it's asking us to do something that we don't really want to do. As we look at Jonah, he ran. He now placed himself equal to the Ninevites, disobedient to God. He also is in need of mercy, just like the Ninevites were. If we move on down into Jonah 1, verse 4, we move on down to the Jonah and the pagan sailors. Jonah has now put himself in the hands of pagans. They may not be as brutal as the Ninevites were. But he was there without the peace of God. You know, it says he went down the bottom of the ship. I always wondered how he could sleep. When you're running from God and your things aren't right, I don't know. It seems that you can't sleep well. I wonder how he could sleep in the bottom of that ship. But as we think about, as he was there with the sailors, he didn't just bring hardship on himself. He brought hardship on others. When we disobey and won't follow God, it's not just us that it involves others. Here, the sailors began to throw their materials overboard, trying to keep the ship from sinking. And they had material loss, along with the fear that it brought on them as well. It says they called on their gods. They called on their what they believed their gods were to try to save them, and they didn't work. Then they found out that what the real story was with Jonah, and they tried hard to row to land. At this point, they had more mercy than Jonah did, which was the so-called man of God. How do our actions, do they prove us as children of God to those that we around us, the lost that we come in touch with? As we look at the story, God can use our failures to save others. As Jonah, the sailors were brought in touch with the true God, with God, and it says they made a sacrifice and made vows to him. I found it interesting as I was looking at the word vows, it cross-referenced back into a number of different places, and it said, I mean, each one, it was they shaved their head. And I told Janice this morning, I said, well, I guess if you made a vow and you shaved your head for the next, you know, month or so until it grew back, it would be a reminder. But these men made vows to God. These men found peace while Jonah had lost his peace. And then we move down to Jonah's prayer. How long, when we resist God, how long does it take us to come to our senses? In Jonah, the NIV states it just a little bit different than the King James Version. But he was swallowed. From the King James Version, it sounds like 3 days. And then he called out on God. In one of the verses, it says his life was fading away. He only had one hope, and that was the one whom he had run from. The reason that he had run from him is now his only hope. God's mercy, God's compassion. He knew God was merciful. He knew he is compassionate. And now he found himself in need of that mercy. It's the only thing that could save him. Does Jonah deserve rescuing? His salvation comes from mercy alone, just like you and I. I believe we've all found ourselves there. We've allowed our flesh to get in the way of God, what God would have us to do. It's by God's mercy that we can turn back to him. In chapter 2, verse 9, Jonah offers the only thing that he has left. He says, I will, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. He's in the belly of the fish. He has nothing except for praise. He makes a vow. He recognizes his salvation comes only from God, and it's up to God if God will have mercy. God's answer? He had the fish spit him out on dry ground. And then we see Jonah's recommission and compliance. In chapter 3, verse 1, God told Jonah, go again. He told him to go again, this time adding to speak the message that Jonah gives him. Jonah's rebellion had a twofold effect on his relations with God. First of all, it broke down his personal relationship, but it also suspended his official function as a prophet. In the commentary that I was reading in, there was an interesting point. It said, Jonah, or servants of God who have fallen need a second calling to God's service. It needs to be shown by God that God trusts them with his work again. In Hebrews 10, we're reminded, but by righteousness, one will live by faith, and I take no pleasure in the one who shrinks back. We, like Jonah, find our strength and peace and is only found in doing the will of God. As we look at Jonah and then the pagan Ninevites, as he goes to spread the message or to tell them what God has shown them, I have written down here, it was like a big circle, and he's back to square one. As Jonah prepares to go, he had quite a ways to travel. Children, how many of you would be ready to travel now? It doesn't say how he traveled. Maybe by foot. Might have rode a camel. Not sure. But they estimate it somewhere about 400 to 600 miles. So you ready to ride to Ohio or Pennsylvania or walk there? It was a long ways, it was a long journey to get there. But this time, Jonah went. As he came into Nineveh, Nineveh was a big city. In comparison to today, actually, there was somewhere I think I have in my notes. Yeah, the commentators say that at least somewhere, I'm not sure right at this time, but somewhere around this time or a little later, this would have been the biggest city in the world at that time. So I was looking up to see what the biggest cities of the world, and I'm not sure I can even pronounce them. So I said, well, I'll go back to even in the U.S., and I think the most population in the United States would be New York. So if you can imagine coming into New York and spreading the gospel or to go calling God's message out, there was it was a big area for him to reach. As I was reading, of course, I Googled a little bit of it, and you know, there's so many opinions and so many things on the internet, and there was some that were talking about Jonah and they actually called it his lame message. And as I read the chapter, as I read through Jonah, I said, well, I believe his message was pretty powerful. It doesn't say anything that he said other than in 40 days, the city will be overthrown. And yet, you look at the size of the city as he came in and the response, there was a great revival broke out. Found it interesting in the ESV, I have some footnotes on the bottom, and it talks about over this time that there would have been, somewhere over this time, there would have been an eclipse, which would have changed the lights and the way the sun shone. And there had also been a famine right about this very same time. Now, if you were to look into the Ninevites and the Assyrians, they worshipped a number of different gods. Of course, Asher was their main god, but then they would have worshipped Sin, which would have been the sun god. So, as the sky goes dark from an eclipse, they would have been believing like they did. They would have been believing that the gods were unhappy with them. This may have contributed to the readiness along with God's message. I found that interesting. As we are faithful in doing what God calls us, God has everything at his control to prepare those to whom he is sending you and I to. We, like Jonah the second time, but we need to do on the first time, need to be faithful, trusting God who knows all things and has everything in his control. If we look at, as Jonah went through and called out to the city, what God told him to do, we see that everyone, kings, soldiers, down to the animals, were to fast, put on sackcloth. As we look at Jonah, as he was in the belly of the whale, and he called out to God, he was looking for God's mercy. He didn't have a promise. He didn't have God's promise that God would hear him, and God heard him. God had mercy. We find the Ninevites the same way, calling out. In verse 9, it says, who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger that we not perish. The Ninevites were calling out, looking for God's mercy. Their salvation, just like Jonah, depended totally on the mercy of God. And then we see the Ninevites, they got rid of their sin, and God got rid of the punishment. The pagans and God are now, if we would say it this way, on the same page, but not Jonah. He's upset. And this brings us into Jonah's angry prayer, chapter 4, 1 to 3. This is Jonah's second prayer. The first prayer was a prayer of asking for forgiveness and a prayer of thanksgiving. And now this one is a prayer very much opposite of that. It's interesting that God's mercy that filled Jonah's heart with thanksgiving in his first prayer in the fish's belly now angers him when God shows that same mercy and compassion to the pagans, to the Ninevites. God asked Jonah one question. Do you well to be angry? Now, it's a little different in the NIV versus the King James. The King James, it sounds like after God asked this question, he went out to the edge of the city. Here, it sounds like he was at the edge of the city. Doesn't show that Jonah replied. It appears that in this amount of time, however long it was, maybe about a month, Jonah has forgotten about his thanks of the mercy that he was shown. But it says he went out and he built a booth, seemingly hopeful that maybe God would change his mind and destroy the town. Jonah is hot, both emotionally and physically. And this brings us into the last part, Jonah's lesson, and the lesson on compassion. If we look at the plant, this plant, it's the only place in the Bible that this plant is mentioned. There's nowhere it's Quickawan plant, I think, is something like that is the Hebrew word for it. It's used nowhere else. They say it, or they expect it could be something like a castor oil plant or a gourd plant. They grow very quickly and have large leaves. I figured probably the closest thing that we have in South Carolina is probably a kudzu plant, and it's nothing. The kudzu can grow about a foot a day, something like that. They grow pretty fast. But it really isn't anything but a weed. Really, a nuisance, really. Not of much value. And really, most people would just be glad to see it gone. If you take a look at verse 9 in chapter 4, finally, Jonah expresses concern or feeling over something that is perishing. But ironically, it was a worthless weed, something of very little value that he actually had concern over. That's when God brings Jonah's attention to the pity that he has on this weed. And then God compares it to the pity of what God, the compassion and the mercy that God has in the very end. It says in verse 11, it says, "And should I not have concern over the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, also many animals?" I think that was probably, as I read that and studied that, that was probably the one thing that stood out about as much to me as anything. As I read, looked into commentators, that comment, the 120,000 that don't know their left hand from their right hand, it crosses that back to Deuteronomy 1:39, where they were getting ready, where the children of Israel had disobeyed God when they were getting ready to go into the land of Canaan. They disobeyed God, and God said he would destroy every one of them. And then in Deuteronomy 1:39, "And the little ones that you said would be taken captive, your children who do not yet know good from bad, they will enter the land. I will give it to them, and they will take possession of it." That's where that crosses back to. And the commentators and what I could write or what I could find show that the 120,000 that don't know their right hand from the left hand would be the young, the children, the young ones that yet have not made a decision. So it's interesting, as God pointed back, he didn't draw Jonah's mind to all the adults. He could have pulled his mind back to the Israelites and how they didn't follow, and all those that haven't listened to God. He could have pointed it to the Ninevites and those that live there and have made a choice already. But instead, he pulled his mind to the innocent that have not yet made a choice, and ask him, "Should I not have mercy? Should I not have compassion on them?" Jonah missed the compassion and the mercy of God. It's almost like Jonah, like the children of Israel, they owned God's mercy. Jonah didn't, nor do we own God's mercy. We are recipients of his mercy and his compassion. Jonah could have been afraid. If his prophecy didn't come true, he would be considered a false prophet. If this fails, this could provoke war against the Israelites. There could have been a lot of reasons why Jonah responded like he did. We probably can have a lot of reasons sometimes for the reasons that we do or don't follow. But where Jonah found peace is when he surrendered to God's call and followed God's voice. His heart was thankful when he gave up. His message was powerful when he was surrendered. You and I, the same, will only find peace when we are surrendered. Matthew 10:38 and 39 says, "Whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it." In Matthew 16:24 and 26, 24 through 26, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul?'" God is a fair God. He's a compassionate God. He's a merciful God. Again, as I look at Jonah, we only see a short period of his life. But it challenges me, and may it challenge each one of us, this week, as we go through life, as we go the places that we go, let us look at each person that we see, God that loves them just as much as he loves you, as he loves me. He wants them to come to him. So as we go through this week, through life, may we not forget the mercy and the great compassion that our God has on us, and may we share it with those that we come in contact with. Walter, do you have a song? 57, Faith and Praise, and you can stand. Let's pray. Thank you, Father, this morning for your compassion, for your love, your mercy, your guidance. We can depend on you, we can look to you, and you will guide us through life, through hard times and through easy times. God, I just pray that you would be with each of us as we go through this week. May we share that compassion, that mercy that you have to those that we come in touch with, those that we see. And God, I just want to say thank you for loving us so much and coming and dying for us. And just help us to be faithful to you as we walk through this life. In Jesus' name, amen.